Any questions or anything to say?
How do you deal with anger when it arises in your group?
Oh, I don't know. I never have any anger. So it's arising generally, not just sort of in a one day. What's the time period?
I don't know. It was like dream, but it started yesterday.
Okay.
When I was in the dream.
Okay. Now I was just curious. Sometimes there's like a few months where it's like.
There's a general life theme.
Okay. May I ask where you feel it? You can say no.
Like right now, it's head.
Okay.
Feel your leg.
Okay. There's a really cool thing in this Japanese art called Jinchinjutsu, that this hold the finger thing. Like in a tantric understanding of the world, like. And also in Tibetan Buddhism, sort of any experience that we have is part of a family of energy that intrinsically would know how to be in harmony. And then when there's pressure or some kind of pressure, let's say, of some kind, through neglect or suppression or whatever, then we experience the difficult emotions. But the difficult emotion is just a form of that energy. So with anger, when we experience anger, it can be part of a time where there is release, there's letting go, there's cleansing, and that leaves room for a new energy to come in. When that's happening on a subtle level, like let's say light compared to wind, so like we're not really so aware that we're cleansing and new energy's coming in, and so we don't know how to invite that new energy. And also then our training is sort of trying to hold it together or whatever, and so anything new has to like talk to the bodyguard at the door before it gets let in. So there's usually an automatic shutdown, then the new energy can't just come through freely, normally. On retreat, it can come through a bit more, and so then we suddenly find ourselves angry, or it can happen in dreams also. Last night seems like a few dreams that brought on some difficult feelings today. So feeling anger as possibly access to a new energy or new phase, and feeling anger also as a side effect of, so let's say toxins that are released when knots have been dissolved. So one of my teachers talks about acids in the body. When we've incorporated the pressure that doesn't allow something to flow freely, we've incorporated that like a knot. And when that dissolves, then there's some chemical byproduct that we can experience without knowing that it's from the release. And so there can be headaches and there can be suddenly tiredness again, even though we were so rested, and there can be anger. Those are the main three things. So then maybe that's not true, but maybe there's some truth in that, and it can help reorient to the anger, that it's not necessarily this kind of big pet dog that's really ferocious, that we have the leash but we know we can't always hold it back, and it's sort of like a whole other framework, that it's a natural byproduct of meditative process, as well as when there has been suppressed energy, we either felt angry and weren't allowed to or whatever, and so it went down, it went into the body, or we felt hurt and didn't even have the movement to be angry about it, but then that comes, and so there, we can also feel an intelligence in it. So like yesterday we talked about when I have a tendency to feel small and then it seems like someone's putting me down, then I might feel smaller, but at some point I'm going to feel, hey, don't put me down. There's part of that movement that's very correct, to say, no, I'm not small. And there's part of that that's sort of wasted energy, saying, you made me small, when that wasn't actually the case. My system learned to accept that I could be made small, when in fact any situation is not powerful enough to take away my dignity and my preciousness as a human being. And so that what we're learning is staying close to our precious, our dignity. So then what to do when it's there? It's already different when I relate to anger, not necessarily as an issue, even. But as a sign that there's been a destruction of old forms, and that's like, yay. Now that that has fallen down, I can feel. So we were talking about what is reality. I can feel better. What isn't propped up? What isn't built up? What is just by itself here already, not made up? And so part of what helps with anger and with other emotions, but with anger is remembering the love of adventure. Adventure. So when there's a big storm, that we love that. Or when when kids play, they equally enjoy building something and tearing it down. Or maybe they enjoy more tearing it down. But anyway, two different kinds of enjoyment. But they almost always go together until the kids get a certain age. The confidence that I can build, and the confidence that without any building is great. So when it's dominant, when anger is dominant, if I can feel a little bit of what isn't anger, so if I can feel a little bit of belly and head together, and there's a chance that it's not right or wrong, that there's this thing that I call anger, this feeling that I call anger, it can happen. One of the things that can happen is that something leads the way and it doesn't stay stuck there. My resistance to the anger keeps it stuck. So that's partly something to play with, is there resistance to this? And what happens if I don't believe that so much, or I'm less afraid of the power of the anger, or I notice that I'm afraid of the power of the anger? That also could be enough. And that can be the case even when it's not a powerful anger. There can still be a fear of it. I'm afraid to hurt myself, I'm afraid to hurt someone else, I'm afraid to be wrong, I'm afraid of just the rawness of that. So feeling some kind of base, let's say, and feeling that, and letting it be hot, sometimes something, some leadership happens. Other times we can come to where I don't know if I can call it anger anymore. I experience something. And that's very interesting also. it's hard not to say too much. Like, that's the good to experience it a few times when it's relevant, not necessarily to go looking for it, but when it's relevant, when there is an emotion that's strong, that's raw, and there is the possibility of some calm or okayness or sense of humor about it or whatever, that then I can just feel it in a more neutral way or as a neutral thing. But I think one thing that can happen there is, and I hope it's not saying too much, is that whatever may have gotten me all angry today, when I let it be and I acknowledge the rawness of it and how in a certain way it's out of my hands, acknowledging that, and first of all, I didn't create it, I didn't make it come, I can't make it go away, here it is, and it has the potential to be overpowering. And so there's a bit of respect, but with curiosity, love of adventure, it can happen that other angers, dormant, kind of resonate without it becoming a dominant destructive movement. It just is, it's allowed to be held and to resonate as it is. And then again, we don't even know, is that actually anger? I don't know, but I feel power and maybe color, maybe some movement of energy. And in that, it's not that we would want to necessarily go and invite all the anger we've ever felt, but sometimes it can happen that it resonates with the corners of us and some insight can come about what's relevant about anger for you in your lifetime, both psychologically and physically and any other, collectively. And shifts can come there. I find it really helpful as well just to question as simply and kind of minimalistically as possible. So without getting the dog more angry, kind of. just, is it about feeling helpless or powerless? So it's kind of like, not like that, but if it's possible to kind of throw a paper airplane in or something, like, or sometimes it can feel more of like the embrace that's actually what the thing is longing for, that place is longing for. So you feel powerless. And then not to let it just stop there, but that can begin an investigation of, I sense that I'm powerless, and other people might not sense they're powerless in the same situation. Other people might do this, that, and that, and that doesn't mean that there's something wrong with me, but maybe it's not true that I'm powerless. I'm stuck in a non-feeling, non-listening position where I don't know that I could just respond or whatever it is that's not happening. Does that make sense? And sometimes it's just messy when there has been anger held back historically. And when it's time, our system is kind of ready and there are situations that are a bit ripe for now it could show itself and not be repressed. It sometimes is a bit messy. And it's helpful if with our friends there's an understanding of what's happening, is a bit clearing the pipe sometimes. We don't want to egg ourselves on. We don't want to, like, just for fun, put more emphasis on yelling at someone just because we never did. But it can happen, and we can both understand what's happening and, sorry, or whatever, but not totally sorry. But not like feeling too heroic about. So leaving room without adding any more emphasis doesn't really usually mean. But that can be important, that there's some room for that, and then we can uncover where either we did cry out or we didn't, when we really wish we had. And even if it didn't, wouldn't have made any difference, but we still really wish we'd said no or whatever. And that that came from a protective force that's life loving. And so that's like recovering the protectiveness. I call it sometimes mother bear energy. And so let it be messy if it has to be, you know. Bears are kind of. I think the main thing is when we can notice this is anger, stop. Like, just, that's enough many times for something else to come. So not, this is anger, shouldn't be here, or should be here, just, this is anger. And so sometimes good if we notice, like, maybe in the jaw, we might not feel angry, but the jaw is going, or we might not feel angry, but our hands are going, or whatever it does to. Yeah. And at the same time, it's so easy that we convert our spiritual practice into being all about cleaning up our nasty emotions. Secretly or overtly, and it isn't. It's more like all of that comes along the way, and the way is really, there's other things that are primary, and that happens along the way, that you have a dream and it comes up and it gets included in the process of connection to what's sort of life-giving and life-loving. And it can be a time that it is our primary focus, but somehow if we keep feeling that the underlying primary mover is something else that's a bit nameless. And does that help? So when something comes up, whether anger, fear, joy, sometimes that's hard to take as well, whatever, and it's sort of a subject for a while. And there can be a kind of thoroughness. What would be thoroughness en français? Complet. Avec détail, like thorough. Not if we would clean the room really thoroughly, we wouldn't only use a broom. We would sweep first, and then we would come with a wet cloth and clean. Well, probably first we'd do the screens and the ledges, and so that dust goes on the floor. Then we'd sweep, and then we'd go, and we'd do the handle. We'd do everything. And there you can do always more thorough, I think. And when we do thorough, then is when we notice what we still didn't do. Like, oh right, the whole ceiling is full of whatever, which it isn't really, it's very quite good, quite clean. So there can be a time where there's thoroughness in a particular subject that's come. And not to be in a hurry to get on with. So it's partly the image of Rumi with the drunk slang and heat, but that could sound demeaning. It could sound like, oh, it's a drunk who's passed out on the ground. And even though we talked about how that could be one of the richest parts of you that's waking up and that you really want to meet and get to know, and still. The woman who's called the mother, who was a co-creator in South India of Auroville, a non-Indian woman who teamed up with an Indian guru to make a huge community and movement. She's very interesting and hardcore. And she talks about how it could be that some people could kind of hurry and go straight to enlightenment, and what they miss. And that once they've gotten there, they can't actually go back and be through and all that. And so they don't have the same capacity to be helpful. And they can't go back and get it. She said, who knows? And what I find is that in the naturalness of how things unfold, there is thoroughness in certain areas. And for some people, when we're really slow, like, there's a lot of thoroughness in a lot of areas. And then we go back and again and say, wow, I thought I cleaned this. I just remember one time a friend let me sublet her apartment in Lucknow in India. And another friend and I stayed there for the summer, actually, which is really a lovely time to go to Lucknow. 40, 50 degrees. Dust storms and so on. And we cleaned the apartment so well when we left. There had been these dust storms that even blocking all the windows and doors, putting cloth under the crack under the door, we were still had to have a cloth over our mouth and nose to be able to breathe. The dust was so present. So we cleaned it so, so well. But there was some time before she actually came back to India from the West. And she was so angry, speaking of anger, that we'd left her apartment such a mess. And there was even a dead gecko, like, in the middle of the floor. Of course. As there always is. So sometimes we do our best job and it's still dirty. There's still more. And it gives a richness for ourselves, and also it gives the potential for richness for others in ways that are astounding. And I'll just read a little bit from Orit Sengupta. She's talking about building a base in yoga practice, the physical yoga. She says, a beginner's practice, and so I like this because it can help us realize and feel how I think we're almost always at the beginning somewhere. We might have a certain amount of skill or even mastery in some areas, but that then allows us to begin in a new direction, a new area, a new skill, whatever. And how the part of us that hates being a beginner and the part of us that loves being a beginner, and investigating why we hate to be a beginner. The feeling, the awkwardness of not knowing how and feeling embarrassed that we can't do it right. A beginner's practice is strenuous, so that's like hard and heavy duty and you have to really work at it. Because we are building a base, establishing the foundation of the asanas, the positions, the postures, movements. And this groundwork is tough. For instance, in preparing for elbow balance, we stay for a long time in dog pose, elbow balance. And with time, lift one leg up and then the other, and we repeat this several times. The weight bearing in these preparations for elbow balance is much more trying than the pose itself, but it creates a base. It establishes a wide and stable shoulder girdle and strengthens the connections between the hands and the shoulder blades. With time, this allows us to perform challenging poses like elbow balance, headstand, and so on. If we can feel how when there's something strenuous going on, so anger comes up and we don't know what hit us and what to do, we can allow it to be a kind of building of a base where it won't have to be that hard later on. It's not like it's going to get harder and harder necessarily, but things get connected through the practice of meeting anger and not knowing how. And then, oh, okay, this happens. This response comes now. And sometimes we remember, oh, well, Jaya said that. That feels okay, possible now. Or Jaya said that, and that's totally banging my head against the wall, so not that. And through all of that messing up and exploring and feeling like a fool and so on, connections and get made and strengths get built without our trying to build them. So it's much less self-conscious than if I would be only trying to work on my, like in the physical yoga, if I'm only trying to work on that connection, it can feel more artificial. But when I'm actually involved in addressing a real situation that's hard and I don't know how, then the connections and the strengthening that happens is less self-conscious and more real, let's say, the word of the day. So we said yesterday, there are teachers who will advocate don't practice, and many times they come to that place of saying, basically what they're saying is, be careful of your motivation for what you're doing. If you're coming from a place of lack, you might end up emphasizing that feeling of lack and neediness and poverty. But usually they've built a base through meditation practice. And sometimes, like with my teacher Papaji, he was enlightened, but he would still sit cross-legged on his bed several times a day with his eyes closed and say, don't meditate. Do what you love, celebrate. And he would say, celebrate, and we might hear kind of, and he would say, go to the beach. Go to the beach, go have a family and send me a letter from time to time. Go live your life. And somewhere we might be somewhere like a spring sort of coiled and pushed down, and we hear someone, we get permission to celebrate, and we think of sort of like spending money is maybe what comes to mind first. Or vacation or whatever it is. And so it was beautiful to be around him where his life was so simple. It wasn't an extravagant lifestyle at all. Celebrate. In the ordinary life. What's interesting also, there's a statement in Jin Shinjutsu and also elsewhere that's as above, so below, as below, so above also. And so when we feel all humble, building a base somehow, trudging through the days of anger or whatever, the hours or we can easily think of ourselves as doing something lowly, something low, and we wish we could be doing something high. And again, it's where our attention is focused on something so-called lowly, building a base, and at the same time, something is happening above. And the fact that we're not paying attention to what's happening above, it usually is really, really good. if I would be paying attention to that, I would get in the way. And we can use the as above, so below idea or principle when we do feel stuck and not sure. So we could feel the anger here, and it doesn't move and it doesn't come out, and it's not that I want to scream, or is it that I want to scream? And we could just literally go, okay, as above, so below. So people have been pointing to this part of their body the last couple of days and feeling stuck here. And as above, so below. And as above, so below. We can feel sometimes taking the attention away from what's drawing our attention can be. So the throat down to the genitals, the pelvic floor, the vagina for women. And this shoulder girdle neck area also can be this area of the body and also down here. And then whatever, holding it, feeling it, moving it. Noticing, we may just realize by feeling that maybe there is a connection or a resonance between here and here, that there is actually something going on here that is related to this. So we just become aware that there is a wider process than what we were so intently focused on. And that in itself can inform us as to how and where and with what kind of quality we attend to our experience. So this is similarly like down. This is as high as you can go almost, so you go as far down. So we have our Wendell. If I can find which page. In Jonathan's lovely talk the other day, when he talked about walking the streams, and even though he's this really dedicated worker, and he was doing work, and can imagine the sweat and the exhaustion and everything, but still feeling the way he was describing, feeling the enjoyment and the love of nature. And so if I can find the poem, I've marked so many. Wendell has a creek near where he lives that he's always lived near, except when he lived in New York. Okay. And he likes to walk it. And it's called Camp Branch. It's the branch of a river. It's a branch that feeds into a. And there, the poem is called The Book of Camp Branch. So the book of this stream. It's a long poem. I'm just going to read a few parts. Camp Branch, my native stream, forever unreturning flows. From the town down to Cane Run, which flows to the river. It is my native descent, my native walk, my native thought that stays and goes, passing ever downward toward the sea. So I love this as a feeling quality for our practice. So the stream of our experience, forever unreturning, flows. And the feeling of our, the flow of our experience as our native stream that we can walk. Our native descent, our native walk, our native thought that stays and goes. So this quality in our meditation and in our lives of, let's say, as if it's just for today, even if we might feel some anger tomorrow too, it's just for today. So in the past, we've done some longer retreats here in Satsal, like a month and more. And I notice how easygoing it is for the mind to think, well, it's just a week. So there's less importance given to which bedsheet I have or if I have enough supplies in case the food isn't so good that day or whatever. It's only a week. It's only a day. And also, it's only a day in the feeling of it's only this one time. This is all there is. Its sound, the sound of the stream. Its sound is a song that flings up light to the undersides of leaves. Its song and light are a way of walking, a way of thought moved by sound and light. Its flow as deep in its hollow as it can go, far down as it has worn its way. So feeling the as-it-is-ness of the flow of our lives and the flow of our practice. The flow of our practice, the flow of our experience, goes as deep as it goes. It flows as deep in its hollow as it can go, far down as it has worn its way. So it the flow itself has made the room for itself to flow. He talks about sense of time, the time falling down, as if the building of time has fallen down. Going down stone by stone, the song of the water changes, changing the way I walk, which changes my thought as I go. Stone to stone, the stream flows. Stone to stone, the walker goes. The words stand stone still until the flow moves them, changing the sound, a new word, a new place to step or stand. I love the feeling of him loving this place and him loving the influence on him by presenting himself there as a way of being in our lives. In the notch of Camp Branch, so a notch would be like where the tree has two branches. In the notch of Camp Branch, the footing changes year to year, sometimes day to day, as the surges of the stream move the rocks. So suddenly there's anger, for example. Every walk, as Archie Ammons said, is a new walk. Every walk is a new walk. And so, go slow. Let the mind step with the feet as the stream steps downward over the rocks. Nowhere, anywhere, but where it is. I also like the feeling in Jonathan's description of his work, looking for the source, the possibility of wherever we are in our flow, of we could trace up towards the beginning, or we could trace down towards the end. And that this delight, he talks about the delight that he feels in doing that, of instead of like, oh, I have to go walk the creek again, and I don't know if it's going to be the same as last time. Wherever we go, we're getting to know the whole flow of Dharma through our own experience. And it's just for today. I'd like to give an example of that kind of stepping and exploring and going slow as we feel our flow and how our flow has shaped the way it can flow and how deep it can go. An example of how a practice can weave itself, a practice that weaves itself towards the unweaving of let's say in the Chinese Zen tradition, they talk about discriminating thought. So the sense that in the Sinsen Ming, the verses on faith mind, they talk about heaven and earth being set infinitely apart, so above and below, disconnected, heaven and earth set infinitely apart by a single discriminating thought. So it's a single thought that there's something wrong. And yet, that also means that if we let that thought be aside, that's all. Heaven and earth are together. So, when I first came to India when I was 20, I was part of a Buddhist studies program as a college student. And we lived in a monastery in Bodh Gaya. And so we took turns doing jobs like you do on retreat to help take care of the place. And one time I signed up for sweeping. And I loved it. And I happened to mention, and the director happened to be present when I said I love sweeping. And she said to someone else in front of me, laughing, like, she can do Goenkaji or whatever. And I didn't know what she was talking about. So there are these retreats that when you hear the word vipassana, people assume you mean a certain vipassana technique that's called sweeping, which is moving the attention through the body. And I just was like, whatever. There's some Zen story or whatever. So. And I have never done one of those retreats also. Never felt the wish. But I did do other Vipassana retreats in Bodh Gaya when that program was over. And it was either two 10-day retreats or two 10 and one 7. So it was a good long retreat. Either that time or the next time that I did it, one of the teachers happened to give instructions for body sweeping the attention through the body, late enough in the time together that I did have some concentration built there. A base had been built, and so I could actually move my attention through my body. Woo-hoo! And it felt like a massage. It was really an amazing experience. And so we were supposed to go to group interviews with the teachers, and I mentioned it to the teacher. And I was really blown away that my mind could do that and it could feel that nice and such a simple thing. And her response was like, oh, that's nice. That's all. So meanwhile, over the decades, people have often asked me if I've ever done one of those retreats. And I have not. And I still have not a wish to. And it has a certain amount of tension around, because people will come on Vipassana retreat with Jaya and expect it to be a Goenkaji retreat. Or they come from the Goenkaji retreat like, oh, etc. Having never actually done it, I can keep a bit neutral. And but it's possible for there to be this discriminating thought of better or worse. So maybe sometimes the thought is that intensity and that sort of singularity of focus with the one technique for everybody, no matter what. And no matter what happens, you don't leave and don't move. And sort of there's something good in that approach, but there can be the sense of this is the only way to enlightenment. And so that can be a discriminating thought. And then there could be the feeling that that's not necessarily helpful for everyone, and there's other ways. And then it could be like, well, it's better to be open, or it's better to be singular. That's a discriminating thought. Who knows? So during this retreat, it came to my mind that moment in the interview with Sharda Rogel, where I expressed this experience that for me was really amazing. And her response was kind of like, that's nice. And I thought, I wonder what it would have been if someone had encouraged me to continue doing that during the retreat while that momentum was there. And then I also thought, being a teacher who tries to give you techniques and let you feel what you want to do and follow through and stay independent and not be that I have to tell you, now do metta every day for 3 hours or whatever. then I thought, ah, I also didn't tell myself to do that more often. I did it a few times, but I didn't like feel my own enthusiasm and my own sense of discovery, like, wow, and do it all day and all night. That didn't occur to me. So that memory came sometime in the last couple of weeks. And that sort of small insight, let's see. How easy not to follow through. And not necessarily that I should have at that time, but just interesting that I didn't. Meanwhile, for the last, let's say, more than 10 years, as part of my daily morning yoga asana practice, I do a body scan. And it's the thing that I have the most struggle with in my yoga practice. Other parts I just love, and it's part of the most special time of my day. I get up early when it's still dark, and I take a shower and do the yoga, and then either go back to sleep or do some meditation and then sleep. And that was like that before I had children, and that's definitely like that now that I have children. That's when it's possible. And so that is this really sacred time for me in my day, in my night, actually. But there is that tension about that scanning thing that is supposed to take 5 minutes, and sometimes it takes 40. And so I'm there in the dark, like wanting to get on to the meditation, like, oh, come on, go. And I can't get it to go. So the fact that I also feel like I shouldn't, it shouldn't take that long, etc., the shame, everything, makes it more of a struggle. So then I came here a couple weeks ago, and within 1 or 2 days I suddenly broke out with an itchy rash, which has happened once or twice before. I still don't know exactly why. But it just came, this very calm, unoppressive and unpushy thought, you should do the body scan, because I had missed a couple days of yoga with the travel days. You should do the body scan. That'll kind of clear out whatever that is. And I didn't pay attention to that. And so even though the rash was still there and quite itchy, I was so tired, I didn't have enough time. I didn't quite do the body scan. Finally, then someone came to me and asked about if there's a purification process going on, especially physically, what helps to release the toxins. And so I kind of reeled off a bunch of things like water, being in water, drinking lots of water, taking more baths, maybe even twice a day, maybe 3 times a day. Physical contact, Jinshin Jutsu. And I don't know if I mentioned or not, but sweeping the tension through the body. So again, I'm telling someone else to do something that I'm not doing. And I have a similar situation. So that kind of woke me up to do it. And it worked. So I'm trying to tell this like very sort of unspectacular story as to give an impression of how a practice could come together. So then there was the fact that I needed to do this body scan now for this rash, and it helped. And when I missed, I didn't do it, so I only did going down, I didn't go down and up, it came back a little bit again, so I did the body scan. Kind of like, come on. Easy to ignore the signs of what needs to be done when it comes in such a simple, non-pushy way. And then there was this memory of that time on the retreat, which was also not a big deal. It didn't take up emotional space or anything. It just came and went. And then, but it was still kind of like, that's curious. I was retreating that as purely a past experience and not also as a suggestion for now. And then somehow just going along, it all came together as like, duh, do it now. You didn't follow through then, follow through now. Like, so simple. And any slight sense of like, but that's not my practice, and I don't teach that, and I never quite find that extra day to lead the body scan in the hall, though I found it helpful for myself. There was just some slight, as like surface tension on the water that was there, and just letting that. Yeah. That's for me for now, it's not only. And so then I did it a bit. And then it happened also. So that difference between when we do the technique and when we find it happening. So that's all, that very as unspectacular as possible story to give a sense of how things also weave together over time, and things that we were helpful and then we left or we thought of as not good. So for example, people who maybe have an allergy to new age things, and that has a bit of a charge for them. Almost for sure, they're going to have to do some kind of crystal thing or some kind of angel thing, or almost for sure, it will come around. And then it will happen also that they'll have a vision of the chakra or whatever. And so just allowing that, it's kind of like a three-dimensional weaving together of what's helpful. And what's helpful is, as it weaves itself as a form of practice for now, is unweaving the discriminating thought, is unweaving that prejudice, that charge of against and for, better and worse. So it's so simple. So simple. And that seems to be what a lot of the mystics also report. It's so simple and ordinary. Along the way, there can be spectacular. Teresa of Avila, Teresa de Avila, talks about these palaces along the way, and they get more and more spectacular, and then the last one is ordinary. And just feeling that ordinary that previously we would have looked down on, and feeling how as above so below, as below so above, that it's not two things, it's not separate from, it's not lowly in the sense that lowly isn't also lofty. Hi. I am a mountain. I hear the echo of the beloved. I am a painting. The beloved is my painter. Do you really think that all these words I've said belong to me? No, they're just the sound of the key turning in the lock. So it's another quality of the practice, the path as it forms itself. A feeling of it's not that I just suddenly had the idea that doing some body sweeping was going to be really good for me and get to it. It came together from all sides before I finally listened. And so that the lovely quality of the lightness of it. And even when there's the doing involved, like we do need to do it, it's a different kind of doing. that doesn't belong to us. And all of that doing, all of those sounds, all of those steps and stones, the sound of the key turning in the lock. Is there anything you want to say or ask or comment or hear?
You can just not answer this, but it seems like it's just off topic or whatever. But, you know, just listening to you talking, I think I have this relationship with yoga where sometimes I love it and it's beautiful, and then and I like resolve to have this daily practice and all this kind of thing. And then I go into this phase where I am doing it because I'm planning my daily practice and I just don't enjoy it at all really, and usually end up hurting myself and I have to give up for a while, and then there's a break and then it starts again. And you know, it's really difficult to kind of stay in the flow. I mean, that's just an example. I could be talking about anything. So it's really difficult to stay in the flow of that good thing.
So sometimes there's the building the base time where it's worth being a bit strenuous, but even so, even if that's the time of strenuous base building, giving yourself the vacation before your body makes you take it. And sometimes it can be even a really mini vacation, like, oh, I'll just do the first two poses that I usually do and I won't do the whole thing today. And then sometimes you do the second pose and you think, well, I really want to do that third one. And it's not really, it could be sound as if you're tricking yourself into it, but it's not really. It's finding that the love of it and the wish to do it and what you feel like doing. So sometimes it's kind of backing off, and sometimes it is, okay, today is an off day. And sometimes that can get easier to feel with practice. But knowing that your body's going to make you take a break if you continue bulldozing, then can give more inspiration to be more light with it. And then there's a couple other factors, maybe. One is when there is a good momentum with a practice that is appropriate, then we all know the feeling of we've gotten enough momentum going that doing that makes me also want to do everything else that feels good and is supportive. So just like if I start eating better, then I feel like taking a walk. And when I eat better and take a walk, I feel like watching less television. And when that happens, then I just spend some time looking at the sky. And when that happens, I remember to call that old friend that I, you know, et cetera, and kind of unravel that way. And sometimes an adjustment in what yoga you're practicing can be worthwhile. That's true. I mean, there are so many styles of yoga, but I just mean sometimes it's like just that one asana that you don't need to do for a while. You need to not do for a while, for example.
I've kind of tried lots of, because this has been for years and years of this, you know. And I think that the thing is, we're just kind of, you know, what I was connecting to with history about the body scan was, it wasn't that you went, oh, I need to do the body scan, must do the body scan.
Do the body scan. Check. Body scan.
Yeah, exactly, that's right. And so something in there where some kind of, you know, assemblage of things comes together that enables the thing. Because I think the thing is that, you know, I've got an extensive list of, you know, improving practices, as we've discussed. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, how any of those things could be in some way free of that charge, I guess that's kind of really the question, which only you have talked about.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Well, being free of the charge is where we're heading. And so we're not there, mostly. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. And it is key. It's not a side issue. But it can help when you've got this all these clunky hour of this, hour of that, and it just simply does not fit. There's no way it's going to fit, but also letting it go is not fitting. Sometimes just feeling that fact, it doesn't fit. But I don't want to let, I'm not, there's not a willingness to let go of this, that, or the other. And so it's a little bit like that guy, Andrew, who loved meditation, but couldn't sit, and therefore didn't meditate, even when the option of lying down or a chair came. But staying with that, there's somehow a dismissal of that there's any other option, that there could be any flow. And sometimes for me it happens that then I come across someone and then that helps shave off this, that, or the other. Or another kind of life event where you really don't have time for all of it, and so you really do 10 minutes of yoga and 15 minutes of this and 20 minutes of that, and you're really glad that you could do that. And it helps pruning. It helps pruning the technique part of the practice. And gently, but challenging that feeling that you should and that you have to, finding ways to play with it. That's just key. And remembering the love of it is part of that. And practicing that, so at the end of the day, what was joyful. Or, you know, you're a writer, so it can be, okay, all right. What I need to practice is blah, 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 blah. Or any way to get going, to find out what you really know that you didn't know you knew. And whenever possible, inverting, so from heavy on technique demand of hours per technique and all, to what just allows a feeling of enoughness already. And from there, it'll be clear anyway, actually. For today, what's possible, what fits, what's good. And I'm glad that even though many mornings I skipped the body scan, many mornings I did the body scan too. So just like whether that's stubbornness or stupidity or steadiness or whatever, it was not always skillful, but I am glad that I did it. And I'm fine about all the times I didn't. Yeah. And whether that all happened so that I could tell you that boring story or that really it's going to now lead anywhere. That now we're going to have body scan retreats. Or who knows? And who cares? Is there anything else on our last evening together for the time being? Anything small or large? Now that we know that small is big and big is small, and down is up and up is down. Anything, like if you're going away from here and you're not quite clear on what way you could sit comfortably for an hour, or what is poverty, what is enoughness, what do you mean? Or
you were talking about this dream earlier, just because it had been mentioned. About,
okay,
you know,
right.
Some people have had difficult dreams, and I'm just wondering, like, how much importance to give to dreams. Because I often, like, find when I have a disturbing dream, it really is so difficult to shake off the whole day, and it really... Or the other way, when I have a good dream that makes me feel good, it's like, really just like, kind of sticks with me often and can really stay for like the whole day or at least the whole morning. And
yeah.
I'm just wondering, like, because it is, you know, it is a big part of our life. as well.
Yeah. It for now, I would say that it's good to notice how much influence there is, and to in the noticing of that, especially when it's negativity that's there, in the noticing of that, like feeling the heaviness or whatever, that maybe there's a way, that maybe a way comes, maybe some response comes that can break the spell. Rather than giving dreams some special importance that because it was a dream, I'm kind of locked in here in this, that what helps? Because sometimes it's a cleaning process, sometimes it's just blah, 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 blah. Sometimes it's powerful, sometimes it's meaningful, sometimes it's a visitation, like, but mostly it's done, and now it's daytime. And there could be a sense of welcoming, like a way of harvesting, if anything important. Kind of the belly works well, harvesting that and discovering your ways by bumping up against how heavy the influence seems to be some days. Really feeling that a response can come of a way to decharge that so that it unlocks. And meanwhile, harvesting any insight or treasure, something that might need to be, we need to be aware of, or something that's emerging or releasing. Anything else?
You talk briefly about just taking the practice on with them.
Sorry?
Taking this practice on with them?
Yeah. So tomorrow also we'll speak more, but it's really important, obviously, that it's not just a 7-day experience and then we remember it and that's all. I think the first thing is that it's possible. I think that the general impression that it is that it's not possible to rest. It's not allowed and it's not possible, but it is. And I can say that even some of you have seen me in the last 6 years, 7 years, not getting much sleep at night, not getting any time alone with being a mom and leading retreats and traveling and so on. And even so, it's possible. So not believing the mythology, the current mythology, that you have to go on retreat in order to have enough protection to take some time to rest, but you can. We might need to be in each other's company more often so that we remember to ask the question, like, what if I rest now? Or out of all the things to do, is it on the list, do nothing? Or shall I do something now rather than which thing shall I do now? But the fundamental thing is coming out of feeling we have to earn the right to rest, which is the typical approach, that we should earn the right to rest by getting our list done, and then, which is goes very, it's a very, very deep running poison. To feeling, for example, how rest is so helpful for doing what we need to do, and for knowing what needs to be done, and for doing it well. And this is also in like really, really basic ways, like when we sleep, the learning process is able to complete better, the immunity is higher, etc. Like there's a lot of really, really simple practical things that happen when we rest that are really helpful in daily life. And so even though that's a blind spot in our culture, people who are doing sleep research now are pretty sure that within a couple of decades we will now consider the amount of exhaustion that people are living with. And then, for example, driving home after an all-night shift at the hospital to be as dangerous as drunk driving. It is as dangerous as drunk driving. And now we don't tolerate drunk driving in the same way. Unfortunately, in Spain, they do a bit. But anyway, in a lot of countries, it's really considered not okay. And it's severely punished and so on, like generally. And that how much we endanger ourselves and others by the exhaustion that we think we're supposed to be living in. That view will change, maybe, in the next couple decades because of research that's coming out. The wrong medicines given, etc., to the wrong people, and understandably because the person's been awake for 20 hours in fluorescent lighting and so on. And then feeling for what's restful, what actually is restful for you. And being in an environment where it's possible for you to do that. Every day. And every day means almost every day. In the more so-called east, which is a random direction to call a part of the round planet. well, it's not random, actually, is it? It's totally geopolitical. And it's funny, there's the East and the Middle East and the West. And where's the middle? Where's the actual, it's the Middle East, but like, is it like Turkey or is it Czechoslovakia? Or For example, in the, what are called the five precepts in Buddhism, they're often translated to English as a vow that we would take, that I will now refrain from aggression, for example. I will refrain from harmful speech. And the original language is so different, and the feeling is so different. It's like, I set my feet on the path to walk in learning to refrain from. So it's an experimental, ongoing exploration of how is it and what is aggressive, what is aggression, what is violence, what is nonviolence. And of course that refines, and things that we didn't even realize were aggressive last year we can feel this year. So it's both less pressure and should and willpower based and more experience based, which is also what practice is. I talked yesterday about the techniques that came from a happening. And if we remember and feel back to that happening when we're doing them, and we realize how it's a happening that it came into your life and how you do it, is also, it's actually a collective body. A technique is a collective body that keeps weaving itself. And your experience informs that as well as being informed by it.
I don't understand the meaning of Patricia Samutpada.
Patricia Samutpada.
Eso.
Or Pratitya Samutpada. So on the last retreat, we talked about this a lot, every day probably. So, and I don't find any decent English translation. Do you have any English words that you like to translate it?
You should just say dependent arising.
Yeah.
You don't have to explain it.
Yeah. Well, how everything rests on everything, or everything rests together, depends together. And in that mutual influence happens. Things emerge, things are born, things are influenced, including we things. That's what it means. And that can work in the sense that anger comes and I'm against anger and anger is against me, or I'm small and I think big is against me, and I don't want to be seen by big, even though I need big or whatever. And then there's the downward spiral. That contraction in the body influences the emotion, which influences the thinking, which influences the body, and then we're stuck in the room, we can't get out to dinner. and it can work the other way, as the unraveling of prejudice, discrimination, feeling against feeling, separation. And so in a way, it means every little thing makes a difference. And we can let that be good news, even though sometimes it's bad news. That just noticing anger already changes the situation. And then feeling it changes it, and then noticing I can't really honestly call it anger anymore changes the situation. Every little thing can change the situation. So we're never stuck. So we notice that we're stuck, changes the situation. And allow, there's more potential for transforming insight or a flow to come. And the main thing is when we're stuck in feeling that the lack is true, the not enoughness, the not good enoughness, etc., is true. And so noticing that already changes. Okay, let's have a minute silence before supper.